It's Monday, January 3rd. All right, raise your hand if you didn't get COVID last week. We start here.
I've diagnosed more people with COVID-19 than any other time during the pandemic.
As the new year begins with a spike in Omicron cases, health officials are reimagining their resolutions.
They don't see the test as being all that important to make sure that you're no longer spreading the virus.
We'll make sense of the new cases and the new guidance. New bizarre weather patterns lead to devastating fires in Colorado.
It's hard to grasp that that was once our house and that we don't have a house anymore.
Our team is there on the ground, and Jeffrey Epstein's accomplice is going to prison. So what's next for his other associates?
Prince needs to answer some of these papers in legal documents this month.
Why other accusers say 2022 is the year Prince Andrew gets held responsible. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Hey, happy new year. And that's how it's supposed to feel, right? Happy new year, new you. Leave behind all the trials and tribulations of the year before. But over the last week, as many Americans have been gathering with family and friends, it didn't just feel like more of the same. It really felt like 2020 part two.
Tonight, the variant spreading across the globe, confirmed now in at least 28 countries, 8 more in the past 24 hours.
I'm absolutely delighted to say that I do not have COVID, and I seem to be one of the only people left.
Wave of COVID cases causes crew shortages, forcing hundreds of flight cancellations and delays.
A lot of people who are out sick, but also people whose anxiety is rising again.
In a way, it almost felt like pre-vaccine times, because here, even in fully vaccinated families, one person would report some sniffling and coughing, and within a few days, it seemed, bunches of people who were hanging out with that person were sick as well. As a result, we have seen just an explosion of cases.
The U.S. averaging 277,000 new cases a day, more than at any other point during the pandemic.
But, and this is important, we have not seen the same rate of hospitalizations, which sounds like a good thing until you show up at a hospital lately. So, first show of the new year, let's take you straight to a hospital in 2022. Right now, we are joined by Dr. Jeff Potthoff, an emergency medicine physician at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Potthoff, this got scary kind of quick, right? These numbers are just shocking. But then we hear this variant's way more transmissible, but maybe less severe. What are you seeing in your ER?
Yeah, you know, I think that sense is holding true. So the last couple shifts that I've worked, I've diagnosed more people with COVID-19 than any other time during the pandemic. But I'm admitting a smaller percent of those people. So if I diagnose 10 people, maybe I admit one. Before, I would have admitted, you know, a higher percent.
They're younger. A lot of them don't have any pre-existing conditions.
The thing that's worrisome is all my colleagues are also diagnosing a lot more people with COVID-19. So when you actually look at the total number of admissions that are going to the hospital, it's actually increasing, even though the severity of the disease is a little bit less than what we saw with Delta.
It's the worst we've ever seen it. Numbers are crazy. Our staff is scared.
Even with Omicron, the thing that ends up getting you admitted most of the time is hypoxia. You cannot extract enough oxygen out of the air to keep your body running. That's what gets you admitted.
When I breathe, it hurts.
The symptoms that I see, they're pretty diverse. It's nothing new that you haven't heard of before. Certainly fever, muscle aches, fatigue is certainly common. I've seen cases where the predominant symptoms are mostly GI. I've got a sniffle and I got a stomach ache. I've got some nausea. Sure enough, Omicron, what we assume is Omicron, is the cause of that.
We have so many patients in the ICU right now that we are all pulling extra shifts and coming in extra days to work.
I think it's important to define, you know, what we mean by less severe. And unfortunately, I think what people have interpreted that to mean is that if I get Omicron, it can't make me that sick. It's a less severe form of COVID-19. And, you know, when we talk about less severe, we really mean at the population level. So if you have 100 people who get Omicron, less of them will require hospitalization. But it's not to say that Omicron can't make you so sick that you need to go to the hospital. And I think that's what we're seeing.
There's no room in the inn.
We're holding patients in the ER for multiple hours, if not days.
We have a really high volume of patients in the hospital right now. They're really sick, and many of them have COVID-19. Many of those are unvaccinated, but we also have folks who just had their heart attack. They have a new cancer diagnosis. They had some sort of neurological emergency, and we're struggling to create capacity room, whether that's beds or staff, to take care of those folks.
Today is not one of the better days. There are a lot of patients on ventilators, long wait times in our emergency department.
You know, and that's just a scenario we don't see here in the United States. Like, we are not used to that. Everyone thinks that, you know, if I get in a crash on the interstate because it's icy, there's going to be a doctor in a hospital bed waiting for me. If I happen to have my heart attack next week, that's okay, because they're going to be able to take me to the cath lab. They're going to open up that artery. I'm going to be okay. And I think what we're all worried about in healthcare is that that might not be what happens in a couple of weeks. It might be where they'll do the best that they can with what you have that's, you know, affecting your health, but it may not be the best care that we would otherwise have given because we just don't have the space.
Well, which then creates like a worst case scenario over the last week or two, right? Where people are gathering in confined areas with not even a ton of people necessarily. I feel like there were people in gatherings of 6 and 8 people who all of a sudden everyone had the sniffles 5 days later and realized they had Omicron. I mean, what are you seeing in your, you know, in Wisconsin, for instance, about the spread of this?
It's pretty scary, the increase in cases, you know, especially in an area where I practice, where we have very high immunization rates. We're still seeing the bulk of folks being unvaccinated, but I'm seeing a lot of people come in. They have COVID-19. We're seeing more of our staff. So we have a lot of hospital staff. They're vaccinated. A lot of them are boosted. They're coming down with it. Mild symptoms. They're not being admitted, but they're definitely testing positive. So I think what we will see with Omicron is a greater rate of breakthrough cases than what we saw before. Now, I don't want folks to think that that means that vaccination doesn't offer any protection. People we admit are still unvaccinated. Those are the ones who do the worst. But we are diagnosing vaccinated folks with these mild cases, and obviously they can't go to work. We're seeing that kind of shut down different industries around the country.
And you mentioned vaccinations, but I feel like the advice up to this point has been, you know, wear a mask, get vaccinated, get tested if you think you got symptoms. Well, I'm sorry. At this point, it seems like there's confusion over whether cloth masks are nearly as effective against something this contagious. Like you mentioned, plenty of vaccinated people are at least getting this and spreading it, even if they're not hospital worthy. And then if you want to get tested, doctor, I'm still waiting on PCR results, the gold standard, since what, Thursday? I know a lot of Americans have been waiting even longer than that. What can we be doing to keep ourselves safe if the test waiting period is longer than the incubation period?
Yeah, you know, I think the big message right now is, you know, this has gone from black and white to like, I can do these things and avoid getting infected, to I don't do these things that get infected, to what can I do to at least reduce my risk? And I think when you look at it in that sense, the things that we've done along the course of this pandemic are still effective. You know, masking is still effective. If you use a more efficient mask, that likely reduces the chance that you get it.
A surgical grade mask or an N95 mask.
It's not to say that all cloth masks are bad at this point. They're just probably not quite as effective as those paper surgical masks. You know, I think testing is important, but like you mentioned right now, with the number of folks who are testing either to go on vacation or go to a holiday gathering, combined with the number of people who are testing because they actually have symptoms, it's been challenging to find a test in the last week or two.
I've seen wait times up to 3 hours. Right now, we're probably looking at about an hour wait time.
What I usually tell folks in that scenario is this variant is so prevalent right now that if you're coming down with any symptoms that seem like it could be a cold, could be COVID, could be flu, there's a really good chance you have COVID. You can just then assume that you have COVID and then just go into your isolation. Or, you know, you can schedule that test. But if you're feeling okay, it's not imperative you get tested the same day. You know, just go into isolation, take care of yourself, go get that test when you can get it. But at this point, with how widespread this is, if you're thinking I might have COVID, you probably have COVID.
It's so key what you just said right there about the paradigm shift of, you know, for the last 2 years, Americans have thought of this as binary. I either avoided this virus because I'm good, or I got this virus because I was bad at protecting myself. Now, with how contagious this one is, the goal might need to be, I'm going to try to keep myself and others from getting very sick by taking precautions. Dr. Podhoff from UW Health in Wisconsin, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Let's quickly turn to ABC's Ann Flaherty, who covers federal agencies. Because, Ann, the next question I have after hearing all this from the doctor is, okay, say I might have COVID, what do I do? I mean, there are new guidelines that came out from the CDC a couple days after Christmas, right? What are they?
There are. So if you test positive, 10 days used to be the magic number. You would isolate 10 days from the point that you either tested or you developed symptoms. Well, now the CDC says it's okay for adults to basically cut that in half to 5 days. This is assuming you have no symptoms or your symptoms are resolving and you wear a mask for the remaining 5 days.
Same for their close contacts who may have been exposed. The CDC recommending a minimum 5-day quarantine if they are unvaccinated or late for their booster.
So, and if you do have symptoms, they basically say you want to wait until the fever resolves itself and then continue to wear a mask.
And get a negative test, I assume, right? Before, like, you go back to work, get a negative test.
No, not at all. I mean, this is a bit controversial. This is something that medical experts have been talking about for quite some time.
These tests are good for surveillance to determine who is infected and who is not.
But, you know, Brad, we actually don't have many rapid tests available.
Oh, wait, that means that, like, you have somebody who's testing positive for COVID currently, perhaps, we're telling them, like, it's cool, your fever broke, your home thermometer told you that, so now we're going to have COVID positive people, technically, like, telling them to walk around the grocery store, like, it's fine?
Well, so their argument is that 85 to 90% of viral transmission occurs in those first 5 days. So they think that if you wear a mask for the remaining 5 days, that you're actually not going to spread it. Mm. They don't see the test as being all that important to make sure that you're no longer spreading the virus.
And then, of course, third is behavior. We've seen in some studies that up to only a third of people actually isolate when we ask them to.
But, of course, this is very controversial. This is something that medical experts have been talking about for a while.
Well, that's the thing, and because I get the justification, but I'm thinking, like, is the guidance because a PCR test, the gold standard, that doesn't actually tell you enough about whether you're contagious, or is it just because the U.S. doesn't have enough tests and it, like, freaks them out to say you need one?
Well, I think it's very fair to say that the U.S. does not have enough tests, and that's probably factored into the equation. Keep in mind that PCR tests are so sensitive. These are the lab tests that you usually have to get from a pharmacy. These aren't at-home kits.
We know that PCRs can stay positive for up to 12 weeks, so we would have people in isolation for a very long time if we were relying on PCRs.
So the antigen tests are an interesting tool because doctors think that you can essentially catch whether or not a person is contagious. So is this a lot more relaxed? Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of room to be skeptical here with the CDC.
You're right. There has been some concern about why we don't ask people at that 5-day period to get tested. That is something that is now under consideration. The CDC is very well aware that there has been some pushback about that.
They did this on a holiday week when, you know, the government offices are usually ghost towns. I think that they were looking at this. They were under extraordinary pressure from the airline industry and others.
More than 1,000 flights a day have been canceled since Christmas Eve. Huge part of the problem, airlines are scrambling to fill staff shortages as employees isolate for COVID.
The industry was saying, are you really going to shut down the economy for a virus that most vaccinated people are protected against? So I think they're doing what people will do, you know, what they'll listen to. I think a 5-day isolation period is a lot more doable than a 10-day isolation period. And I think it's an indication of where we are with the pandemic, that people are ready to loosen up the rules a little bit, because whether you're vaccinated or not will determine how the virus impacts you.
Yeah, from airlines to businesses and offices, we heard about hospitals and nursing shortages. The question becomes, are we really going to take people out of commission for that long who might not be capable of transmitting it at that point to other people? It's important to note, though, children in the official CDC guidance still have that longer 10-day waiting period if they're talking about schooling. That has not changed. Ann Flaherty, really helpful stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, no one was surprised to see a wildfire. They were surprised to see it in the dead of winter. We go to Colorado after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor, you know the type, like I've had this person before, that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here. Now, Americans weren't only dealing with COVID over the weekend. In fact, in Colorado, they were also dealing with what quickly became the most destructive wildfire in the state's history.
We have multiple houses on fire. We are backing out of here. We are in heavy fire, heavy fire.
Fast-moving wildfires leave behind an apocalyptic trail of destruction.
ABC Zorin Shaw is on the ground there in Colorado right now. Zorin, what are you seeing?
You know, Brad, every time I go to a fire or a scene like this, I think this is the worst I've ever seen. This is really the worst I've ever seen.
Within less than a few seconds, it went from less over 100 yards away to their house was on fire.
When we got into the car, our faces were covered in black ash and debris, and we had masks on, and it was in our mouths.
There are literally hundreds of homes that burned up in a matter of minutes.
Right now, I'm sitting in the car and looking at this neighborhood that's been completely leveled. And now it's just totally blanketed by snow. It's one of the most bizarre scenes.
I don't know if the snow, if it came a day earlier, I don't know if it would even have done any good because the fire was so intense so fast.
This fire started on Thursday, 6,000 acres. It took out 900 homes. Three people initially were missing. We're down to two now. You know, the good news out of all of this is it started snowing, you know, just a few hours afterward.
It's hard to grasp that that was once our house and that we don't have a house anymore.
Family members have been coming by the last few hours to look at the remains of their home. You know, a lot of them incredibly traumatized, tearful, now homeless. And a lot of them just didn't expect it.
We had no idea this was going to happen.
By chance, I was just off early. You know, I had finished my route and I went home and I was like, we weren't prepared.
I spoke to one couple. They were just in tears. They really said, they said they had no notice.
My brother was sleeping and I knocked on the door and I woke him up. And it's like, you need to get up now and pack bags. We might have to flee. I think within 10 or 15 minutes, the side of the house was on fire.
He tried loading his car up. At one point, he says his leg almost caught on fire from the embers. He wanted to go in inside his house and grab more stuff. He couldn't. They lost their cat, Bubba, in the house. And now they're just trying to figure out what to do next.
Well, and that's kind of the weirdest thing, right? Like, when you talk to people in Colorado, it sounds like they are truly shaken by this. Is that because of the bizarre weather? Is that because of the timing? This was in December. Is this because of the scope and the destruction of it all? What is it that makes this so different?
You know, Brad, I spoke to the governor, and you know, he says without a doubt, climate change is a part of this.
I think we're seeing a lot more of these weather-related risks with the climate that we're facing.
He said this was the horrific convergence of two things: unseasonably dry and a warm winter, no real snow until this point, and then so much fuel. And, you know, most Christmases, they have 6 inches to a foot of snow already. That didn't happen this year. And then coupled with historic, he says, wind gusts, over 100 miles per hour. This was just the perfect scenario for this type of fire.
Right. And you hear about there not being a fire season anymore, right? It's more just like state of perpetual wildfire risk, especially because of the bizarre wind patterns that are getting kicked up by these weather systems. However, huge wildfire, most destructive in state history in December and January in Colorado. Zorin Shah, bizarre stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
In all the hubbub surrounding the season, it was actually easy to miss an incredibly significant development in one of the most notorious sex trafficking schemes in modern American history.
The jury reaching a verdict in the sex trafficking trial of Ghislaine Maxwell here in New York.
Jeffrey Epstein was not convicted of his charges before he died in a cell. But last week, a jury unanimously decided that not only did he commit sex crimes, but that he had help.
The aftershock from Ghislaine Maxwell's conviction felt far and wide. The 60-year-old found guilty of 5 federal charges.
I just feel so grateful that the jury believed us.
Think about it. This means that Jeffrey Epstein's orbit now includes a convicted sex trafficker. And so starting this week, the spotlight will intensify on others in his orbit. ABC senior investigative reporter Aaron Katursky is with us. And Aaron, I mean, first of all, Ghislaine Maxwell was not top of mind for a lot of people during the holidays. Understandable. What did the jury decide here?
The jury ended up convicting Ghislaine Maxwell of 5 of the 6 sex trafficking-related crimes that she faced, and she now is exposed to as many as 65 years in federal prison. No sentencing date has been set yet.
We firmly believe in Ghislaine's innocence. Obviously, we are very disappointed with the verdict.
She is already vowing to appeal. In fact, her attorneys told us that they're laying the groundwork to appeal. And her family told us that ultimately, they believe she will be vindicated.
There's simply no question that there are many victims of Jeffrey Epstein's crimes. They're simply not crimes that were committed by my sister.
But it was a rebuke, the verdict was, for her defense.
How is Ghislaine doing?
Maxwell's defense claiming she was being used as a scapegoat for Epstein and attempted to discredit her accusers, questioning their memories and claiming they were motivated by money.
That didn't work. And in fact, the jury ended up seemingly believing the testimony of 4 accusers.
The first of 4 victims to testify was Jane, who teared up as she recounted her repeated abuse by Epstein when she was 14 years old in the mid-1990s.
Who told at times graphic and emotional accounts of meeting Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein.
And when asked who was most often in the room other than Epstein, Jane replying, Ghislaine Maxwell, pointing to the 59-year-old, alleging it was Maxwell who showed her how Jeffrey likes to be massaged.
Setting the groundwork for what they described as years of sexual abuse.
Well, and you've talked about the defense here that, you know, there's lots of people in Jeffrey Epstein's orbit. It's not just one person. Well, that brings us to this week, because now you've got notable acquaintances of Jeffrey Epstein who did not figure into this trial. I'm thinking of Prince Andrew, the Queen of England's son. He has been accused of abuse by one of Epstein's other alleged victims. So I mean, does Ghislaine Maxwell's verdict now affect a case like his?
I don't think it does, Brad, but it certainly does change the focus.
It's not how Jeffrey died, but it's how he lived. And we need to get to the bottom of everybody who was involved with that.
There is a focus on a civil lawsuit against Prince Andrew that was brought by a woman named Virginia Giuffre. She says she was 17 years old when she was brought into Jeffrey Epstein's lurid world and forced to have sex with the prince on a number of occasions.
He knows exactly what he's done, and I hope he comes clean about it.
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady.
And Prince Andrew has long denied this claim, most famously and most recently in a 2019 BBC interview where he says he did not have any kind of sexual relationship.
She provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't.
But she is suing in federal court in New York, taking advantage of a window that opened for alleged victims of childhood sexual abuse, basically to eliminate the statute of limitations, and so they can go on to sue the men that they say abuse them. And over the weekend, Brad, as Prince Andrew has sought to try and dismiss this lawsuit, he made another claim about Virginia Giuffre.
His attorneys argue that since Giuffre lives in Australia, she cannot bring her lawsuit in an American court.
A federal judge at least temporarily rejected that argument, saying he can argue jurisdictional claims later, but for now, the lawsuit can move forward and the prince needs to answer some of these papers in legal documents this month.
Well, right, in what is now considered a criminal enterprise, not just by one man, Jeffrey Epstein, but him and an accomplice in Ghislaine Maxwell. Aaron Katursky, thanks.
Thank you, Brad.
We're going to take one more quick break. When we return, it's like they chose one day to enact all their new laws. Oh, wait, that's exactly what they did. One Last Thing is next.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
One last thing. My favorite part of a new year is all the new laws that take effect. Because some are serious and some are offbeat, but all of them tell us something about who we are.
We are making Illinois the first state in the nation to require that Asian American history will be taught in public schools.
For example, we are a nation that hates noisy yards. So, starting right now in Washington, D.C., you're no longer allowed to use a gas-powered leaf blower.
Call the coffee thing. I think it's rum? I don't know. They put, like, coffee beans in it, and then just pour some booze on top.
It's delicious. That last
round. Multiple states are permanently allowing those to-go cocktails that sprang up during the pandemic, and as long as your lemonade isn't spiked, kids' lemonade stands are now immune from shutdowns in Illinois.
So what we're going to use for a lemonade stand is a tablecloth I got for my birthday, like, 3 years ago.
In Texas, you're no longer allowed to chain up a dog outside in the baking hot sun. And in California, chickens in poultry plants are getting more room inside their cages. You want to know how our nation is thinking about the economy in the year ahead? Well, look no further than Ohio, where students must now pass a mandatory class on financial literacy.
Credit report is like a report card letting you know how well you did by paying your money back you borrowed.
Or go to Washington State, where home sellers must disclose whether you'll have internet access to work from home.
The property disclosure statement, what it is a...
And on a national scale, of course, the biggest concern is still healthcare, which is why, starting this week, it is now against federal law for a hospital to pick you up, treat you in their ER, and then surprise you with a huge medical bill.
To be paid a reasonable market rate for their services instead of just charging whatever they want to our insurance companies.
Same for patients who use those in-network surgeons, only to learn their anesthesiologist was out of network. Medical surprise bills are now supposed to be a thing of the past. See? This year isn't all a repeat. We used to have slogans for each year. Like, I'm thinking, you do you in 22. Like, do your thing, Americans. You've earned it at this point. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.